Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Today on Democratic Perspectives, we are talking to Professor Emeritus Noam Chomsky from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the Department of Linguistics and Philosophy. Regarding philosophy and linguistics, Noam Chomsky is one of the most influential people in the world. I don't say that very often. According to Wikipedia, he is the eighth most cited source of all time. And he is the most cited living author, according to Wikipedia. From his first article on the dangers of fascism when he was 10 years old, to his assessment of the assassination of Osama bin Laden, Professor Chomsky has been writing in about politics and philosophy and linguistics right along. Dr. Chomsky, welcome to Democratic Perspectives.
Very glad to be with you.
I'd like to ask you, Professor Chomsky, what your take on is on the whole immigration debate that's going on. I think you know what happens in Arizona. We've had a lot of a nativist response to immigration and a lot of complexity. What's your take on immigration, borders, what's happening maybe worldwide?
Well, there's in the background a conflict of values, but then there are crucial circumstances that have to be taken into consideration. The conflict of values is between two opposing values, each of which is worth respect, one of which is that people should be free to go anywhere they want. In fact, if anybody believes in free trade, virtually nobody does, but if they did, they would pay some attention to the patron saint, Adam Smith, who stated that a founding principle of free trade, without which it doesn't exist, is free circulation of labor. That is the ability of working people to go anywhere. Of course, he was thinking about the country, but the same principle holds worldwide. So that's one value. People should be free to go where they want. The other value is that a community has a right to preserve integrity that is of that importance to it. So if some community wants to be, say, an Orthodox Jewish community in upstate New York, okay, they have a right to be an Orthodox Jewish community. Well, there are cases where these values conflict, and at that point you have to start looking at circumstances, as we always do in human affairs. So it's interesting questions about Europe, we can go into that, but take the United States. The United States has a very mixed history with regard to immigration. Up until roughly the mid-19th century, immigration was quite free. One thing, it was coming from Europe. Actually, it wasn't entirely free. So if you go back to the founding fathers, like, say, Benjamin Franklin, the leading thinker among the founding fathers, the major Enlightenment figure, he was very skeptical about immigration. There were certain groups who he thought should not be admitted because they were too swarthy. That was his word. That was Germans and Swedes. I won't try to figure out the reasoning, but so only pure Anglo-Saxons. However, as the indigenous population was gradually exterminated and expelled, incidentally, exterminated is the word that was used by the perpetrators, as they were exterminated and expelled, the country opened up, a lot of resources, you needed a population. So immigration was, in fact, encouraged from Europe with some constraints, but not too much. By the late 19th century, that was beginning to shift. You started getting the most extreme case was the Oriental Exclusion Act, kept out anyone from Asia. except Japanese, who were regarded as a little different from Asians. That went on for a long time, and I won't go through the whole record, but there's a mixed record about allowing immigrants. The current issue primarily has to do with the what we call the U.S.-Mexican border. Now, like most borders, that was a border established by violence. The United States conquered half of Mexico in a war of aggression, you know, 160 years ago. So what is now, say, Arizona or the Southwest in general and California, that's essentially Mexico. And you can see it by the names of the cities, you know, San Francisco, San Diego, and so on, and Santa Fe. I mean, these are all Spanish names. But the border was established by violence. It remained quite an open border. Pretty much the same people living on both sides. People would move across fairly freely, you know, visit your relatives and so on. That changed substantially in 1994. In 1994, Clinton launched an operation to militarize the border. That was the first time. Not by coincidence, that was the same year that the Clinton administration rammed through NAFTA. I should say rammed through. It's called an agreement, but it certainly wasn't an agreement if people are part of their countries. It was opposed by the population in all three of the countries involved, and we're not sure about Mexico. They don't have good polls, but certainly in Canada and the United States. But it was rammed through over popular objection, and it was understood by the framers of NAFTA that it was going to lead to immigration from Mexico. The reasons are pretty straightforward. Mexican agriculture is quite productive and efficient, but it can't compete with highly subsidized U.S. agribusiness. As I said, nobody believes in free trade except for others. So agribusiness, as we all know, is highly subsidized. And both because of the subsidies and the economies of scale and many other things, a lot of Mexican agriculture, maybe fruit, but not, say, corn, is not going to compete. So it's going to drive workers off the farms. Furthermore, Mexican businesses are not going to be able to compete with U.S. multinationals who, under NAFTA, are given rights that go far beyond the rights of persons. So, say, if General Motors invests in Mexico under NAFTA, they have to be treated as they have to get what's called national treatment. They have to be treated like a Mexican company. If a Mexican person of flesh and blood lands in New York, he can't ask for national treatment, obviously. So this is special rights granted to corporate entities way beyond the rights of persons. But that's part of NAFTA. And, of course, it, again, is going to tend to undermine indigenous manufacturing and other industry. Net effect will be a flow of immigrants. There's another factor. In the 1980s, the United States was supporting massive terrorist wars in Central America. In Guatemala alone, maybe 100,000 people were killed in the Guatemalan highlands. There was virtual genocide. And the remnants, what remains of those shattered societies, includes people who are still fleeing to the United States right at this moment. In fact, there are refugees, say, from the Mayan highlands who are trying to flee to the United States to survive somehow. So there's a lot of background to why there's immigration. All right, then comes other questions. There are mixed attitudes towards it. So business tends to want the cheap labor. In, say, where I live in eastern Massachusetts, if you see people cutting the lawns or working in the back of restaurants or construction business, there's a fair chance that they're undocumented workers who can be hired for very little money. They have no rights. They can't protest. They can't say anything. They'll be kicked out of the country. some parts of the country, like southern Florida, they literally became slaves. They were imported in, often not knowing where they were going, and they lived under literal slavery. There were a number of court cases about it, finally.
We'd like to hear what you have to say on the Dream Act also, Dr. Chomsky. We want to kind of specialize our talk here on immigration. It's hard to think of anyone being against the Dream Act, and yet it seems to really struggle to get any passage.
Even in Massachusetts, a pretty liberal state.
It seems like an issue like immigration brings out kind of the dark side of American policy sometimes, American politics. Sometimes we're in an emotional, psychological sunny spot, and sometimes we get a lot of hysteria, at least in Arizona, about immigrants, immigration. Mm-hmm. People are afraid that Mexico will want the land that we stole from them back, so there's extra fears here. The borders here were once very open. I mean, you drive into Mexico and have lunch and drive back, and they could do the same thing.
Now it's a term of derision from the conservatives, especially in Arizona, that, you're one of those open border people. You're dismissed.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them conservatives, because a conservative would agree with somebody like Adam Smith that labor should be able to people ought to be able to circulate freely. So they call themselves conservatives, but they're not conservatives. But yeah, that's true. And immigration does arouse all kinds of concerns. Some of them are understandable, but incorrect. So there are many people who feel that that immigration undercuts the domestic workforce. That's not really true. Studies show that immigration actually increases economic growth and leads to more work. But it's understandable why people would feel that way. Like my job as a construction worker was taken away by an employer who's willing to employ an undocumented Mexican for much lower wages and rotten working conditions. The answer to that should be, improve working conditions in Mexico. In fact, that's not utopian. That's what was done by the European Union. It didn't work perfectly. We're now seeing some of the problems, but it worked quite well. Before the European Union admitted the poorer countries, the southern countries, it spent some time in compensatory funding and other devices to try to raise their standard of living so that when they did enter into the Union and could move freely, they wouldn't undercut the wages of northern, more affluent northern workers. And that worked pretty well, in fact. And some of the proposals about NAFTA that came from the labor movement here, the labor movement here, contrary to belief, did support NAFTA, but a different version, along with the Congressional Research Bureau. They proposed a version of NAFTA which would include measures like this to allow integration of these very different societies, but after steps to undercut the threat to more affluent workers. Well, that was not even discussed. It was thrown out.
A system that put people ahead of corporations.
But there are ways to deal with these problems humanely. However, you're right. I mean, the very fact of immigration does raise all kinds of fears, fears of our society is being taken away from us, we lose our jobs, other things, and some of them factually incorrect, some of them kind of morally incorrect, but yes, it's there.
Thank you for joining us today, Professor Chomsky. We'll pick up on this again next week. We'll discuss the issue of immigration, but also other issues with you. Thank you very much for coming on our show.
Glad to be with you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.